This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427JOY949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
The International Association of Athletics Federation, or IAAF, the World Athletics governing body, announced new rules last Thursday, including a new classification for female athletes with differences of sexual development. In other words, intersex athletes. This means intersex athletes will be required to lower and maintain their testosterone levels in order to be eligible to compete in international competition. This is an issue for intersex athletes who present with both typical male and typically female sex characteristics. To be clear, these rules that the IAAF have announced are only for specific athletic events, including mid-distance running, events run by Casta Semenya. The IAAF has tried to introduce similar rules previously, but they were overturned in 2015. In order to provide better evidence to support the implementation of these rules, the IAAF commissioned a study on the effect of high testosterone levels in female athletes and found the unfair advantage that this might produce. It found that, in certain events, female athletes with high testosterone levels benefit from a 1.8% to 4.5% competitive advantage over female athletes with lower testosterone levels. There are two problems with the validity of this research. As pointed out by Dr. Karkazis in publications, the IAAF has funded, analysed and published this data themselves. It's research specifically designed to support their argument and therefore isn't impartial. The second problem is with the data itself. The report authors ran their test 43 times to come to their conclusion. For example, when you do a statistical test, you flip a coin. And if you flip a coin enough, you'll eventually get heads. If you do enough statistical tests, you'll eventually find the result you want. What does this kind of classification and segregation mean for not only intersex athletes, but the intersex population? We spoke to Morgan Carpenter, Co-Executive Director of Intersex Human Rights Australia, formerly OII Australia, about what these kinds of rules that define a person's eligibility based on the levels of testosterone in their body mean for intersex athletes and the intersex population. Because now it looks like there are guidelines that are created to exclude them from competing at their best and put them in a position to only be able to compete by taking medication that'll regulate their bodies.
Intersex is a word for a whole range of different variations that mean that somebody was born with a body that doesn't fit medical norms for female or male bodies. So we have sex characteristics that don't fit medical norms. And there are at least 40 different intersex variations, each with a very different impact on somebody's body, including genetics, gonads, genitals, and other issues. So we're really diverse. We're an astonishingly diverse population. The IAAF and the IOC, they're only concerned with a very small number of intersex variations, and they are intersex variations where somebody... Well, they're really concerned about this notion that if intersex women compete, then that means that endosex, non-intersex women are going to suffer. So they're only concerned with a small number of intersex variations.
The International Association of Athletics Federation, or IAAF, has recently come under fire since releasing its new regulations for the female classification, specifically focusing on athletes that show traits commonly found in intersex people. Although there are typically separate categories for men and women in sport, when it comes to the category of women, there's been persistent concern around the issue of fairness, especially when it comes to the variation of athletic ability, something not found amongst male competitors.
Sporting competition has, for many decades, problematized the bodies of women athletes. So an Olympic official, a US Olympic official, in the 1950s, this guy was called Norman Cox, was talking about how the IOC should create a special category of competition for unfairly advantaged hermaphrodites who regularly defeated normal women, less skilled childbearing types with largish breasts, wide hips, and knocked knees. And so there is a very long history where the bodies of women who don't fit stereotypes of what it means to look like a woman have been targeted.
Regulating intersex athletes may be more difficult than it seems and raises many questions.
How do we know if an athlete has higher than typical levels of testosterone? If a woman athlete has that level, I mean, that might be picked up in doping. But if you look at the history of the way the guidelines have been used, they've been picked up when doctors or other officials involved in events identify some kind of deviation from norms for sex characteristics. So look, they're looking for physical characteristics that appear to be unusual or less common in women. So they're specifically looking for people that are essentially non-conforming. And often that's associated with some degree of either gender non-conformity or just a disinterest in fitting Western standards of what a female is supposed to look like or supposed to dress like. And we see some of the same kinds of assertions made even about, you know, amazing black women tennis players. You know, there's all sorts of language that is used about their bodies that and their femininity or perceived masculinity that is also quite horrific. There have been instances where white European athletes have talked about themselves as being the first white athletes to cross the finishing line. So there's very clearly an intersection here between how women are supposed to look and what it means to be a black athlete.
Although there are differences athletes do accept and categories that they're willing to work within, the difference between intersex women and non-intersex women is far from the difference found between men and women.
There is agreement that men have a performance advantage in athletics over women. And the Court of Arbitration in Sport heard that was between 10 and 12% a performance advantage. Nobody is complaining and nobody is saying that intersex women have a performance advantage that even comes near that. The claims that the IAAF was making was that there's between a 1 and 3% advantage, which is pretty marginal, and that's comparable to many other kinds of advantage, like athletes who are able to metabolize oxygen better or athletes that have a higher pain tolerance. So there's all sorts of advantages that athletes have that are not being touted in the same way here.
So what's the solution? Will intersex athletes be allowed to compete with other men and women without constant concern surrounding fairness? Will they be forced to undergo medical intervention? Or will they be treated as an entirely separate gender identity, unable to compete amongst their peers? It all seems a bit ridiculous when you break it down in this way, doesn't it? Because this is the athlete's body. They're not doing anything other than competing with the tools that they've been provided to live their life every single day. When we draw a line in the sand and say, you're on the unfair side because of the way that you were born, can we really call this fair?
One of the issues that is happening here is that intersex children in global north countries, in high-income countries, and even in many middle and low-income countries, are subjected to medical intervention early, which can have consequences for how our bodies function for the rest of our lives. And in some cases, the women that are competing in sport have discovered through these rules are people that have not been subjected to that kind of medical intervention. And what we're being shown in these rules is quite blatant. It's what happens to intersex people the world over, that we are forced to take treatment as infants or children or adolescents, or later in life, we're forced to conform. And at the same time, we can see that clinicians have, in some ways, adapted to a legal environment where some countries have created a sex classification. And what they're doing now, what they're saying in these guidelines, is that either you are forced to take the treatment or you will be othered and excluded as a member of a third sex or as competing with men. So this is really, you know, the way that, intersex people are treated in our societies writ large. We are at the same time normalized by medicine. We are forced to be either female or male. And at the same time, because of the construction of these new categories legally, we are othered as neither female nor male. And this tears people apart.
We're speaking with Morgan Carpenter, Co-Executive Director of Intersex Human Rights Australia.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.